From cannonballs to climate change, discover how Corfe Castle in Dorset is bringing hundreds of years of history to life and confronting its greatest foe yet. The article is written by assistant editor Amy Tinkler and is read by Glenn McCready.
It's May 1643, 9 months into the First English Civil War, and Corfe Castle in Dorset is under siege. Looking out from the castle keep perched on a hill, staunch royalist Mary Banks and her daughters can see a 600-strong mass of parliamentarian soldiers ranged throughout the village and valley below. Day and night, the soldiers' voices and the smell of their watchfires on the surrounding hills travel on the breeze to the women and the small garrison of 80 men from the village, barricaded inside the castle. Fast forward to the present day, and Corfe Castle is besieged by a much subtler foe, climate change. Over the last decade, changing weather patterns have caused the centuries-old remains of the castle to deteriorate more rapidly than ever before, putting the entire structure at risk. In 2023, the National Trust launched a 3-year, £2 million conservation project to tackle these issues and bolster Corfe Castle's defences for the future, while also offering visitors the chance to step back in time and explore medieval life, including some mysteries from the castle's past. Standing among the ruins of the outer bailey today, you can still feel the history contained in the castle walls. James Broomfield, one of three storytellers, so called as their role is to bring Corfe Castle's history to life for visitors, says, "Back in the medieval period, this part of the castle would have been rammed with people. You'd have blacksmiths forging weapons and horseshoes, carpenters and masons working on building and repairs, people cooking food, horses and carts coming and going, soldiers practicing archery and sword fighting. It would have been noisy, smelly, and ankle-deep in mud, among other substances. If, however, you were important enough to pass through the southwest gatehouse into the castle's upper wards, you would find yourself in surroundings fit for a king." James says, "Like most early Norman castles commissioned by William the Conqueror, Corfe was originally made out of wood. However, it was later rebuilt in stone by William's son, Henry I. We know that Corfe was a key strategic location for England's monarchs as they continued to improve its defences, not to mention creating luxurious royal residences for themselves within the castle walls. The Normans were highly skilled castle builders," explains James, indicating an exposed section of the 2-metre or 6.5-foot thick curtain wall made up of two layers of facing stones, known as ashlar, sandwiching a core of rubble, all held together with lime mortar. He says, "This construction gives the walls incredible strength and makes them very durable, unless you blow them up and expose the core to the UK weather." Unfortunately for Corfe Castle, this was exactly what happened. Cast your mind back to that scene in 1643. James says, "Mary was in charge of the castle while her husband John was away with King Charles I, so the parliamentarians probably didn't expect much resistance. But when they demanded that she surrender, she fired a cannon at them. The resulting siege lasted 6 weeks, but Mary held out. According to historical accounts, she and her daughters even joined the fighting when the parliamentarians attempted to scale the walls, filling buckets with hot embers and tipping them over the soldiers below." James says, "Eventually the parliamentarians fled in the face of a royalist army advancing from the west, and Mary became a celebrity in royalist circles for her spirited defence of the castle." Yet, just 3 short years later, Corfe Castle found itself besieged once more, and this time the outcome was very different. James says, "By 1646, the Roundheads were winning the war, and Corfe was the last royalist holdout in Dorset. Parliament wanted to snuff it out, so they began another siege. Mary wasn't here this time, and John had died 2 years earlier. Morale quickly ran low. Inside the castle was one Lieutenant Colonel Pittman, who suggested that he could sneak out through a secret cellarport, a small gateway, and ride to fetch reinforcements. When he returned, he brought about 120 troops, who filed in through that same cellarport. It wasn't until most of them were inside that the castle's defenders realized they were actually parliamentarians. Pittman's betrayal meant the garrison was soon defeated, and just days later, Parliament ordered the castle to be demolished. The task fell to a regiment of military engineers, known as sappers, but the castle's construction was so strong that it took 6 months to reduce it to a ruin. At one point, they ran out of gunpowder and taxed the locals to buy more. What remains today still looks impressive, but the ruins are vulnerable to our changing climate. Increased rainfall and warmer winters have accelerated the growth of vegetation, particularly valerian and ivy, whose roots grow into the cracks between the stones and weaken the lime mortar. Water seeping into the rubble core also causes damage when it freezes and expands. Periods of extreme heat are likewise problematic, as became clear during the drought in 2022. James says, as well as causing the plant roots to shrivel, the heat caused the lime mortar to dry out and shrink. This loosened the stones and quite a few fell. We collected them to put back during our big conservation project. The 3-year project primarily involves removing vegetation, carrying out repairs, and repointing the mortar of the castle's 9 towers, the central keep, and the 8-metre or 26-foot high curtain wall. Due to the castle's defensive position at the top of a steep hill, the trust needed to bring in specialist masons with rope access training, who often carry out their work while dangling 55 metres or 180 feet or more above the valley floor. Rather than trying to restore the castle, conservators are carrying out what's known as remedial conservation to repair and stabilise structures using historic techniques and materials. Pam White, who trained in buildings and stonework conservation before working as Corfe Castle's education officer for almost 30 years, now volunteers with the Trust's Heritage and Archaeology Ranger Team, known as HART. She was part of the team responsible for sampling and analysing the lime mortars used by the original builders, and she says these days we simply lack the familiarity the Normans had with the materials. She explains, "It takes a lot of research and experimenting to get it right. The castle went up in stages, and the analysis showed that different types of lime mortar were used at different times across the castle. We've mimicked the colours and textures of the originals by developing several different mortar recipes, using varying ratios of ingredients and types of aggregates sourced from across the Purbeck area, just as the Normans did all those centuries ago. The conservators also use modern techniques to help protect the castle from the effects of climate change. Walking around today, you might spot cut turf covering the exposed tops of some of the walls. Unlike the valerian and ivy, the turf has been placed there deliberately as part of a conservation technique called soft capping." Pam explains, "When it rains, the turf absorbs the water and stops it seeping into the exposed masonry core below. Then, when the sun comes out, the grass releases the water back into the atmosphere. It's a great way of protecting the masonry while still keeping the spirit of the ruin." While the conservation teams are dealing with the lasting effects of the Civil War damage, Trust archaeologists have taken the opportunity to try to solve the mystery of where the parliamentarians entered the castle on that fateful day in 1646. Contemporary letters suggest that the cellarport Colonel Pittman used for his betrayal led directly into the inner ward, which meant the parliamentarians would have quickly been able to take possession of key areas. In 2024, the archaeologists received permission from Historic England to partially excavate an area near the remains of the East Turret, where conservation work had unexpectedly uncovered the top of a stone arch. The two-day excavation was led by regional archaeologist Martin Papworth, who began his career with the Trust at Corfe Castle in 1986 and wanted to investigate the arch as his last dig before retiring. He says, "We had permission to lower the ground surface under the arch by half a metre, or 1.6 feet, and it quickly became clear the arch was indeed the top of a saliport in the inner ward wall, one that isn't on any of our existing historic maps." However, the archaeologists haven't yet been able to find a corresponding exit on the outside of the wall. Martin says, "We aren't yet sure if the turret was built to block the external entrance to the saliport, in which case it couldn't have been used to betray the castle during the Civil War, or if the turret was built as fortification for the saliport, in which case it could. To know for sure, we'd need to dig deeper on the outside of the castle to see if there's an external entrance." In the meantime, budding archaeologists can dig into the excavation when it features in Series 3 of the BBC's Hidden Treasures of the National Trust. Corfe Castle is also hosting events as part of the Council for British Archaeology's annual Festival of Archaeology on the 18th to the 19th of July. While the castle might not be quite ready to give up the secret of its saliport just yet, there are many other stories brought to life today, from tours guided by storytellers like James to living history events. This summer, you'll be able to learn how medieval swords were made and practice skills at arms on the 5th to the 6th of July, or witness a dramatic reenactment of the castle's last stand against the Roundheads on the 6th to the 7th of September. You can even examine the castle's replica trebuchet, which is designed to throw water balloons rather than huge rocks, burning tar barrels, dung, beehives, or any of the other missiles used in the medieval period. There's also an audio guide where characters from the castle's history share their stories. You might meet Constable Alan de Plouquenay, who managed the castle on behalf of Henry III, or hear Lady Elizabeth Hatton describing the 17th century gardens she created here. There's also the tale of Princess Eleanor of Brittany, imprisoned at the castle by her uncle, King John, after he did away with her brother Arthur and threw 22 knights sworn to protect her into the castle's oubliette, the Boutevant Tower in the West Bailey. Oublier is French for to forget, so you can imagine what happened to them. This year, Corfe Castle's visitors have a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to explore a part of the castle that's usually well out of reach. The King's View is a temporary platform set high in the keep, which was commissioned by King Henry I in the early 12th century. James says, "This is where his private chambers were, so you'll see the same view that he would have enjoyed when he stayed." While the medieval period can often seem far removed from our lives, there's something about Corfe Castle that instantly transports you back to a time of chivalrous knights and siege warfare. Pam says, "I love watching people, especially young children, walk across the bridge and stop and stare at the castle looming above them. Even as a ruin, it's got so many stories to tell, and so many secrets for us still to uncover."
Visitors to Corfe Castle can climb the King's View Tower as a standalone experience or as part of a guided tour. See the website for dates and prices. All money raised goes directly towards the conservation project. Find out more or donate to the appeal at nationaltrust.org.uk/Corfe-Castle-Project. Other castles to explore near you include
Bodiam Castle in East Sussex. Bodiam has everything you'd expect from a 14th century castle, including battlements, a portcullis, and a moat. Dig into the dressing up box to see what you'd look like as a knight, or discover more about the medieval way of life during one of Bodiam's living history weekends.
Lindisfarne Castle in Northumberland. Around 750 years after the Vikings invaded Lindisfarne, Henry VIII ordered that the island be fortified as a defence against the Scots. The castle saw action during the Jacobite Rebellion and served as a garrison until architect Edwin Lutyens turned it into a holiday home in 1902.
St. Michael's Mount in Cornwall. Perched high on a rocky tidal island, the 12th century castle at St. Michael's Mount has seen its fair share of battles. It weathered the Wars of the Roses and the English Civil War and lit beacons to warn of the approaching Spanish Armada. Book at stmichaelsmount.co.uk.
To find more castles or forts near you, visit nationaltrust.org.uk/visit/castles-forts.